We are live. What's going on, folks? Welcome to episode number 14 of the Nuclear Golf Podcast. My name is John. I'm the co-owner of Nuclear Golf and TW Legion, joined tonight by Hutch Bennett and Mike Carbone. Fellas, tonight we're going to get through on a bunch of different topics. We're going to start by talking about golf's longest day. Cam Young and a bunch of other PGA Tour stars were actually in the running to make it into Oakmont next week. We're going to go through each of the 10 qualifying sites and briefly touch on the guys that are making it through. We're going to obviously talk about Scottie Scheffler. It's 3 wins and 4 starts now. Just won the Memorial yesterday. Charlie Woods has arrived. Huge win for him. Last week, I guess it was. So we're going to get into that. Carnage at Oakmont. Reports are starting to come in about the playing conditions at Oakmont for next week's U.S. Open. Doesn't sound like it'll be an easy test. There's also reports of a top amateur golfer that's just passed on his Korn Ferry Tour card. He's going over to LIV. And then the Tour Championship format was also announced, the new format. We'll get into that and much more. So let's just get into it, guys. Hutch, Mike, how are you guys doing? Did you have a chance to watch the Memorial over the weekend or any of the coverage today on golf's longest day?
Yeah, I saw some of the Memorial. It turned into the Scottie show, which we kind of figured because it a lot of times it ends up turning into the Scottie show when he's in the tournament. So I did get to see some of that. I love that tournament. Got so many good memories of our boy Tiger winning throughout the years over there. Also remember him shooting 85 there that one year. So I do love watching that tournament. It's also, you guys know how I am, right? Like I'm one of those that I don't like the birdie fest. I don't like the 30 under par. So that's one of those tournaments. That's not like that. It's difficult to win there. So it's one of my favorites to watch. So I did get to see it. And then right now, golf's longest day still going on, baby. Still going on. I know we're going to get into that here in just a minute, but it's a great day. It's a great day.
Yeah, it is a great day for golf, Hutch. I got to watch a fair bit of the coverage on Saturday and Sunday, and you know, it's just been really cool to see Scottie, you know, just leap into this stratosphere that only we've seen Tiger in our lifetimes, at least, get to. I mean, I really think that if Scottie wins another major this year, I mean, we really got to start having some of those conversations. You know, is this right there with Tiger in 2000? You know, I mean, the way that he's been dominating fields and stuff. I mean, you know, he's the heavy favorite every week, and it's not really close either. You know, the gap between world number one and 2, 3, and 4 is just drastic, and I just can't say enough good things about Scottie. And it was pretty cool to see him on 18 greeting his wife Meredith and his son having that a little mishap,
having the dad moment.
That's as close as I'm going to get to a world number one golfer right there in terms of relatableness right there. My kid's got that shot in the bag.
That was pretty funny to see.
We're going to get right back to the Memorial here shortly, but I do want to briefly touch on what's been going on today, golf's longest day. 10 qualifying sites across the U.S. Guys are playing 36 holes. It's their last chance to try and qualify for the U.S. Open next week at Oakmont. The one site that was a big center of attention today was Kinsale Golf and Fitness Club in Columbus, Ohio. It's close to where the Memorial was, so a bunch of PGA Tour guys were teeing it up there today. We actually just witnessed a playoff. Cam Young, Chase Johnson, Eric Cole, Max Homa, and Ricky Fowler were all vying for the 6th and final spot of the 6 qualifying spots that were available today. It was actually Cam Young that came out on top, so he's heading to Oakmont. I'm not sure if they finished out the playoff for the first alternate spot with the remaining guys that were left in. But the other guys that qualified today from this site were Eric Van Ruyen, Bud Cauley, Lanto Griffin, Justin Lower, Harrison Ott, and then Cam Young. So those were the 6 that made it through from that site. If we go up to Summit, New Jersey, Canoebrook Country Club, there was 4 spots available there. James Nicholas, Chris Goddard, Roberto Diaz, and Benjamin James, the amateur. Where else? We got Duke University had a qualifying site, seven spots there. Alistair Delcherity, who's actually the Barstool athlete, close with the four Riggs, he's actually made it through. Kind of the only real notable one for of the seven that qualified from that site. Can go to West Palm Beach, Florida. Four spots there.
That one's going to go into tomorrow.
Are they on a rain delay or what's going on?
Yeah, so I saw they had it on the coverage just a little bit ago. That one's actually going to go into tomorrow to finish out.
As of right now, Blades Brown and Luke Poulter are both in qualifying positions. But again, we'll see what happens tomorrow. They've still got quite a few holes to play. So we'll see what happens there. Just take a quick look at the rest of them here. I know that Michael Block was teeing it up at Valencia Country Club in California. Preston Summerhays, amateur, made it through there. I believe Block was like T23 for a little while. It looks like he ended up finishing T35. So Michael Block, the Block party, will not be going to Oakmont.
Sorry, Brad.
Here's your results from Columbus. It's on the screen right now. Chase Johnson and Eric Cole are in that order, are the two alternates. Homa did not end up being an alternate.
Damn. No. So Homa didn't even come out on top after.
In the alternate. Yeah. He's out.
Okay.
He's not going to be playing Oakmont.
Yeah. According to co-owner Brent, the crowds just weren't big enough for Michael Block at the USA final qualifying today. So it's just not going to work.
Did you do the Atlanta one yet?
No, I don't believe I did. Atlanta.
Is it Piedmont Driving Club?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Five spots out of there. Mason Howell, Jackson Buchanan, Tyler Weaver, Jackson Quoven, and Will Chandler.
That Howell kid, he's 17 years old and shot 63 in both rounds.
Jesus.
Yeah. And got it.
And then
how did Evan Thompson do?
Evan Thompson. Oh, Jackson Quoven. Jackson Quoven is the kid that just got through PGA Tour U, right? He's gonna delay. Gonna delay taking his card, but he's had quite a year from Auburn.
Evan Thompson finished 25 shots behind the first place guys. Wasn't the best day, but he probably, I mean, look, it's an accomplishment to get there, right? To even get that far. So good on him.
Up in Canada at Lambton Golf and Country Club in York, Ontario, some notable guys making it through, like seven qualifying spots there, including Thorbjørn Olsen, Matt Wallace, Emiliano Grillo, Victor Perez made it through, Mark Hubbard as well, Nicholas Norgaard and Kevin Velo. And I think was there any other sites? We did North Carolina, Palm Beach, York, Atlanta. Oh, Springfield, Ohio had four spots. Zach Blair, John Peterson, Dawson Armstrong, Kurt Kitayama, Maxwell Moldovan.
Oh,
Grant Hafner.
Yeah, they're still going. Zach Blair stuck one in the fourth.
Oh, are they in a? Hole. They're in a playoff right now, eh?
Yeah. Okay. On the fourth playoff hole, Zach Blair just hit one to about a foot, and there's one spot left. There's two guys vying for it. So John Peterson looks like is like 12 feet away, and Zach Blair's a foot away.
Okay. So that's Zach coming Blair. Down. That's coming down to John Peterson and Zach Blair.
Yeah.
At Springfield Country Club in Ohio. So, I mean, we've been tracking this today. Pretty crazy. Like the playoff that happened there, you know, in Columbus. I mean, you had Ricky, you had Homa, you had Cam Young. And then the two other guys, but I mean, some star power there from the PGA Tour all in one group. I think I saw it was four top 100 players all in the same playoff group trying to make it to Oakmont. Pretty wild for the galleries that were out there. They showed the galleries on Golf Channel. Looked like there was a few hundred people out there watching that playoff today.
Yeah, that would have been pretty neat to be at for sure.
It's certainly impressive. It's wild because, I mean, this happens every year, right? Because it's always the day after the memorial ends that they do this. And
right.
That Ohio site's always the massive one. I've never even heard of Piedmont Driving Club before today. And I live in Atlanta. I didn't even have a clue of what that place was. But I did see in looking at the scoreboard that Zach Johnson missed it by just a couple shots at Piedmont Driving Club.
Yeah.
That's the biggest name I see.
Yeah. Anyways, we'll wait out the results.
I'll let you know as that happens
with Blair and Peterson. But for now, let's get back to Scotty. It's 3 wins in 4 starts now for Scotty Scheffler. If we go back, what he won, was it the Byron Nelson that he won? And then he won the PGA.
Yes.
Now he's won the Memorial. He's become the first player since Tiger Woods to defend his title at the Memorial Tournament, which is just another insane stat if you think about it. Tim has somehow joined us. I don't
internet
know
hero.
How his internet is on, but it is.
And I've been ready.
Tim Bowman, how are you doing?
I'm good. I've been ready for like 10 minutes.
10 minutes.
Well, we got to keep the people waiting for you. You're the main event.
You guys are funny.
What's going on, Tim? I assume you watched a lot of the U.S. Women's Open coverage.
I did. I watched all of it yesterday. Saturday.
What were your thoughts overall? I saw that Lexi Thompson came out with a statement about her slow play accusations. Did you see that?
Yeah, because I watched Thursday and Friday too, and you know, I didn't, maybe it was just me, but I didn't think slow play wasn't on top of my list. I didn't think she was, I mean, she's a slow player, but I didn't sit there and go, oh my God, she's taking forever. What's going on with Lexi? I never got that vibe or that feeling. So I kind of didn't really understand what Charlie was all hussy and fussy about, because it was a little over 5 hours, but as far as I know, most US Opens are longer because the courses are brutally tough. I mean,
not to cut you short there, Tim, but Zach Blair made his putt and he's in. Zach Blair's okay. There.
Zach Blair's okay. In
from Springfield, so that one's over.
That one's over. All right. While we're on the topic of Lexi, I have the statement in front of me that she put out. Wasn't the week I was hoping for. I just want to say a few things. First, big thank you to the USGA, the volunteers, and the fans. US Women's Open has always held a special place in my heart ever since I was 12, and it always will. In reality, my game was never ready for the week, even though I put a lot of hard work into it. But that wasn't going to stop me from fighting through the week. I also want to add on this, because pace of play was a huge talk this week. But want people to realize our group basically waited on every single hole on the group in front. We were never out of position, warned, or on the clock. I'll be the first one to say I'm not as fast as my playing partners the 2 days, but I'm also the last person that wants to be out there for 6 hours. So before you make assumptions, before you get all the facts right, before basing it on pictures and little clips, that's all. And then she said, and I'm not sure how many times I'll have to repeat this, but I never used the word retire. I said, not a full-time schedule, because I'm not sure how much I will play. Just taking it one at a time. That's why I'm still playing the tournaments I actually enjoy or want to play in. Much love to all my fans out there for the support. Lexi Thompson issued a statement following accusations of slow play. I mean, there was really just one kind of viral clip on social media, honestly, from what I saw. And it wasn't that bad, to be completely honest. It looked like Charlie Hall was getting a little bit flustered at the beginning of the week there. I think it was on the first day. But I mean, it is what it is, right? Like, you know,
US Open brings that out in people.
It's tough conditions. Like, you're taking longer over your putts and all that kind of stuff. I believe her that the group in front was probably playing slow. But it is what it is, eh, Tim?
Yeah, I mean, it was a good tournament. Stark played amazing golf on Sunday. She kept fighting off Nelly every chance she got, making a clutch putt.
Yeah.
She was driving the ball tremendously. She got a pretty good break on, I think it was 7 on the front nine when her ball bounced over the bunker. And she was able to capitalize on that. Nelly Cobb putt. She hit like 16 fairways in a row, which is incredible for a U.S. Open between Saturday and Sunday, but she couldn't make anything. So it all boils down to putting at the U.S. Open. You got to make putts, you know, in order to win. So it was a good tournament. The course was a good challenge too. I liked the way they set it up. There were some cool holes that you could drive and you could also make. I saw a girl drive the green and make a double bogey.
That's crazy.
Some Ernie L stuff there.
Yeah. So I'm excited.
Like seven putts. What's that?
If Oakmont is anything like this, it'll be about complaining about slow play. Oh my god. Yeah,
we're gonna get into Oakmont. But we do have to kind of wrap up Scottie Scheffler and like just some of the domination that's been going on with him. Most PGA Tour wins by 4+ shots since the beginning of the 2021-22 season. This is courtesy of Justin Ray over on X. Scottie Scheffler 7 times. Victor Hovland 2. Tony Finau 2. So, I mean, that just kind of puts it into perspective right there, the dominant fashion. Not only the fact that Scottie Scheffler is winning at an insane clip, but the margin of victories that he's racking up over these years. 7 PGA Tour victories by 4 or more shots going back to 21-22. And the last 9 outright 54-hole leads on tour for Scottie Scheffler have all been converted into victories. 9 for 9 when he holds the 54-hole lead, which just goes to show you this guy has it. He has that it factor. He's able to close. It really reminds you of like Tiger Woods back in the day. And I mean, he is performing at an insane clip. If you look at Data Golf's all-time ranking, which has it's called the Data Golf Index. They had Tiger Woods at 3.88 and Scheffler at 3.09. This is all time. Vijay Singh is 3rd at 2.96.
That was Tiger's 2000, right?
Yeah, 2000. And then June 2nd, 2025 is Scheffler.
He's February the closest 9th. Thing. Like the data backs crazy. It up. Like you say, he's the closest thing to Tiger since Tiger.
Sean Zach over on X said, it's official. The current version of Scottie Scheffler is the best we've seen. It's true. Not only the best we've seen ever out of Scottie Scheffler, the best we've seen since Tiger Woods dominated in 2000. What we're witnessing is truly remarkable stuff. It's pretty wild.
I think John, you know what's funny? I had that exact Data Golf thing pulled up. I was about ready to say all that stuff too.
Sorry, Mike.
Everything. Yeah, you just took it right out of my mouth.
Yeah.
He's. They might ask him to cut his hand every Christmas just to make it fair.
The new PGA Tour ritual.
Yeah. All right. We actually
remember
have
when.
A pretty...
Remember no, when no. Phil said he wasn't going to win until the Ryder Cup?
That was a hot take right there.
I knew that was going to age like a 3-day-old cake for sure.
Okay, this one's crazy. This is Rick Run Good over on X. So okay. Scottie Scheffler has 16 PGA Tour wins in the last 1,200 days, which is one win every 75.25 days. If he keeps that pace, he'll match Tiger Woods' record of 82 wins in January of 2039.
We're such a long way from that happening.
I know.
Not even close.
I know, Tim, but it is
better. 14 years of better.
He's better than anybody else we've seen since Tiger, right? But
yeah,
absolutely.
We're still in different ballparks here. We need to see it sustained for. Let's start with 5 years and then we can talk a little more about that.
But Tim, that really puts into perspective, right? Like just what Tiger did. Like Scottie Scheffler essentially needs to continue at the same winning pace that he's had for the last 4 years for the next like 14 years.
That's what's so insane about that is I see these stats where, like, I saw this meme yesterday about Scheffler had 3 wins in the last 30 days, and so have the Colorado Rockies baseball team, which it's incredible to even think about. And what Scotty's doing is remarkable. But what Tiger did was not only was it remarkable, but it was sustained for such a long time that it's insane to even think about. Like, that just goes to show you how crazy Tiger's run was, is the stat that you just said about 2039. I mean, geez, that's, I'll be 99 years old by the time Scotty does that.
Yeah. I was going to say, Tim, that's why he picked you, because you were in the prime of your life when Tiger was doing his thing in 2000. John was in diapers. Mike probably was too. I was 10 years old, so I don't remember it that well. You were in the prime of your life, buddy.
It's just like, what Scotty's doing is crazy, but like, Tiger did what Scotty's doing on steroids. I had a conversation yesterday with a friend of mine on the way home from my nephew's baseball tournament in Reno. And we were talking about, we'll always talk about the 2000 US Open. Like, he won by 15. Like, Scotty's winning, right? And he's dominating golf, but Tiger won at Scotty's pace and better and by more shots. And that's
what, should we start that narrative? Did you say Scotty was on steroids? Should we start that narrative?
No, I don't. I think
Scotty, the only way to this thing from that. Not even remotely by, like,
we got to explain what's happening, Mike. He's killing everybody.
I know, but it's not like, you know, he's, you know, looks like a strong safety or something like that. He looks like the average Joe.
Yes, the average dad.
Yes.
He's got kids, so he's on some type of steroid. Well, that's not for this show. They're not here with us today.
What we're saying, Joey, is Scotty's not that good.
Yeah, that's
it. Is that what you got out of it?
Yeah.
Recurring guest, Joey, who's here, seems like every week, because Scotty can't stop winning.
Yeah, we were joking before we got live on here. We were saying that, like, he's not playing next week. He might still win. He might just win without playing, and I'll be back on. So, it's kind of insane at this point. I mean, obviously, you know, it is like sustainability. He'd have to go for quite a while to reach Tiger. But in terms of skill level, like, if you take a snapshot of points in the season, I mean, he's nearing that kind of level that you can compare the two. Yeah. So, actually insane to kind of watch it happen live.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy. Joey, do you have a chance? You watch the Memorial, I assume.
Just
watch on Sunday.
Yeah, and it was kind of, I mean, I previewed it earlier last episode. It's kind of that course where, I mean, it's just like the boring golf from him is what can probably make him win. Now, Ben Griffin's playing absurd golf too right now. Like, if Scotty didn't exist, he would have won that tournament again, and it wouldn't have been close. And so, I mean, really impressive stuff from him. But, I mean, Scotty's that kind of course, it's just, got to hit your fairways. You know, when you do make mistakes, you got to be able to get up and down, you know, avoid bad stroke disasters. And that's what Scotty's doing best right now. So, I mean, I kind of saw it from a mile away instead of the odds. I think he was, you know, favored by, I think he was plus like 280 at one point, or even lower. The next closest was in the thousands. So, you know, kind of insane. And it's cool. Like you said, afterwards, like, I think the Memorial does a better job at, like, keeping cameras on longer throughout. Obviously, he goes and shakes Shaq's hand, so I think that's probably why. But it also is, like, a testament to – he's just an everyday average dude. He's got a baby that's blowing out diapers on TV. And, you know, I don't know if you saw the video. He, like, was trying to get out of the line of sight of Bennett, so he's just, like, showing him a wall. And he's just like, look at this wall, and, like, tries to, like, you know, sneak run away. Yeah, so, I mean, just like, this is just your average suburban golfing dad that's just an absolute monster on the course, and it's, you know, it's really special to see.
It's just amazing to see Scotty just continue to run up these wins like this. I mean, 3 wins and 4 starts. It seemed like it's slow start to the season for him this year, and everyone was kind of like, oh, maybe it's just, you know, he's fading a little bit, and, you know, he'll get a win or two here or there, but just all of a sudden, just right back at it, like 3 wins and 4 starts, like, Rory McIlroy, who? Like,
Yeah.
No, but obviously not, but just
yeah.
Crazy, like just the way that it's transpired over the past month.
But it is too, John. Like it's crazy how we went from, you know, Rory wins the Masters and he's the talk of the world, yeah. And then Scotty's just kind of like, nah, son, that's mine.
Yeah.
And he comes back and now nobody's talking about Rory. Like it's, I mean, now this week could be a Rory week because he's playing, right? It's in Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Rory could have played at the Memorial, but
Rory's playing this week. Yeah.
Yeah. I knew he like, well, like Jack said, he likes to play the week before the US Open, which I get, I guess. I don't know. I guess that's a preference thing.
Yeah. Rory will also be speaking to the media this week. First time going back to the driver situation at the PGA Championship. He obviously had his pre-tournament news conference, and then he declined media requests all 4 days of the tournament after his rounds, which was quite a storyline, actually, towards the end of the tournament. Just all the talk about why is he not speaking, for a player of his stature to not be speaking to the media is pretty, not something we're accustomed to. Another couple big names that had big finishes at the Memorial, Jordan Spieth. He's actually putting some top 10s together this season. I think he ended up finishing T7. Kind of blew up on Sunday. Shot 74 on Sunday.
Yeah.
And the other guy that had a big week was Ricky. He finished T7 as well. He was one over on Sunday, but he was in it for a while. So guys like that. Ben Griffin, as you said, guys, he just continues his tear. Won the previous week and then now a solo second finish. So he's on a heater right now. Sepp Straka as well finished 5 under for the tournament.
That was my pick. I saw something on X the other day. It was like generational runs that we'll talk about for years. And it was like Jeremy Lin with Lin Sanity. And then it was like this Griffin guy's May 2025 run on the PGA Tour was one of them. Cause he's been just electric since Zurich. He's been just on fire.
Absolutely. I mean,
it's been crazy to watch and great for him. Like did you see that he made more money for finishing second this week than he did winning last week?
Oh yeah. Weird. Yeah.
Just crazy.
We have a comment over on X. Aaron said Ricky lost in the US Open playoff qualifier. Yes, he did. Ricky did lose on the first playoff hole qualifier today, but he did punch his ticket to the Open Championship by finishing top 10 at the Memorial. So that's big for Ricky. Wouldn't have been in that major otherwise. So it was a great tournament, the Memorial. It's always a great site. It's Jack's tournament, always a great field, and always a good finish on Sunday. And it's fitting that Scottie Scheffler was able to defend his title and go back to back. Well, now that we've covered Golf Longest Day and Scottie Scheffler, I think we should get into the Charlie Woods show. So Charlie Woods looks like he has arrived at long last. Captured his first AJGA title last week. He had to beat like Miles Russell and a number of other top junior players from the States to go on and win. Just I'll pull up the scores that he shot, but just want to get your guys' initial reaction to Tiger Woods' son Charlie just kind of busting onto the scene here, it seems, and kind of out of nowhere, to be honest, because his finishes at some of his previous tournaments hadn't really been up to snuff with what you would expect. I mean,
right.
We're not trying to put any expectations on the kid. It's obviously completely up to him how far he wants to take this. We know full well he has full resources to be able to take this as far as he can, and all the money in the world. But if this is what he's going to do, I mean, it sure looks like we're getting closer to that point where he could get, you know, some sponsors exemptions. Like things are coming into form here for Charlie Woods. What are your guys' initial reaction?
I mean, for me personally, just good for him. Like that just had to have been such a huge sigh of relief for him. You know, like you touched on earlier, John, you know, his past tournaments, you know, he hasn't really, at least you know, finish wise, he hasn't been trending in the right direction by any means. There hasn't, like, you know, in this, you know, slowly but surely, you know, positive trajectory. But, you know, we've all seen clips of his swing, you know, seeing him at the PNC. You know, we know that the potential's there. You know, he's got a beautiful swing. You know, he's got all the tools that, you know, it takes to be a legitimate amateur golfer and to, you know, go play D1 somewhere and really make a name for himself, and not even just because he's Tiger's son, but because he's a really good player, and it's just a matter of time before he puts it together, and to do it in such a strong field too. You know, I think that's a huge statement for him, and, you know, I'm just really excited to see where this takes him, and maybe he just goes on a tear now that, you know, he's got win number one under his belt.
We've seen, like, and we saw a little bit of it in the first round of this tournament, right? Like, he has the ability to make a lot of birdies. Yeah. You can make them in a lot of birdies in a round, right? But like we saw in the first round of this one, I think he shot 70, shot two under, right? And he had three pars on the card.
Yes.
Yep. Like he had eight birdies, an eagle, five bogeys, and a triple or something like that. Like, so he's just kind of unpredictable. Now the weekend, the last two rounds that he played were just flawless, right? A lot of times, and we've talked about this with other guys, that sometimes it just takes that one. And I remember us distinctly talking about it with the Griffin guy, that it just takes the one to kind of get the ball rolling. I did see Danny Rapp put something out that, like, June 15th, college coaches are allowed to start talking to him. So, it's hard to imagine there's not a school in the country that wouldn't want him just on name value alone. He could probably go anywhere, but now he's really showing the game to back it up, which is a huge thing for him. I mean, we've never doubted, like John said, he's got the resources, the money. He doesn't have to work if he doesn't want to. I mean, as far as like a real job, but to see him kind of put it together and to see him be committed, it's unfair because he's always going to be compared to dad. Right. And that's not fair to anybody. We're sitting here talking about Scottie Scheffler needing to be Scottie Scheffler for the next 14 friggin' years to even be in the same conversation, right? Like, it's unfair, but it's built into it. So far, he seems to be doing a good job of kind of managing those expectations and making us realize that he's a different guy. To Tiger's credit, he's sheltered him from that to a degree for a long time. So it's great to see. I'm thrilled for the kid. A huge win. I mean, I know you listed off, John, some of the names he beat were the top amateurs in the world, and he moved up to what'd you say, 14 or 13 in the rankings?
Yeah. Like, if you actually look at the universal golf rankings for junior boys, Miles Russell, number one in those global rankings, Luke Colton, number two, those two guys were both in the field. And I believe I saw a post, 60 of the top 100 juniors in America were like in that field. So
it's hard to overstate, but like, this is just a massive moment for Charlie. Like, Charlie Mania is starting. Yeah. Connor Brent needs to be looking for a CW tracker at some point, right? Like, he's got to start looking.
Mm-hmm.
I think
we got to start recruiting.
I think what I've been waiting for from him, and what impressed me the most last week, was, like Hutch was saying, the roller coaster round, the Jordan Spieth round in round one, but the able to go from one night to the next day and tune your golf game in and dial it in to shoot in 65, 66 and do that consecutively. I think that's what kind of we've been all waiting for. It's one thing to go out and make a bunch of birdies and make a bunch of bogeys, and that kind of shows your immaturity as a golfer still, kind of. But when you can go out and have a wild round and then go hone it in on the range, or, you know, look at some film or dial your game in and then shoot 65, 66 or 66, 65. That's what I've been waiting to see out of him, man. That was impressive. That's what impressed me the most.
Yeah. If you look at some of his other starts, like, he was T25 in March at the Sage Valley Junior Invitational. He was T52 at the DJ World Junior Championship at the end of February. He also played the US Junior Amateur Championship, right? That's where he finished T240, shot 82-80. But post-round, he was super excited about his performance. He said, to finally do it after all the work I have put in and not playing well in big events in the past, even though I'm so much better than that, and for it to all finally come together is such a great feeling. Just being able to say to myself that I have won an absolutely amazing event and that I've performed under high-pressure situations is huge going forward. I haven't been able to say that. I've done that, and now I can. It is a big thing for my mental game going forward. Said he didn't look at the leaderboard once during the final round. Anyways, it's huge for Charlie Woods. Huge, huge moment for his confidence. Who knows where this could take him going forward. He's going to be that much more motivated, that much more hungry, knowing that he's been through it before. Now, don't get me wrong. This kid has been, you know, on TV, PNC Championship for like 4 or 5 years now. He's seen what it's like to have crowds following him, be under the gun. I found he actually performed well in that event. Like, Tiger and him finished like second, like twice. And a lot of the time they were...
The longers robbed him.
They cheated. Well, that's a whole other story. Sure. But like Charlie carried for a lot of those moments. Charlie carried. Like, he made a ton of putts that Tiger wouldn't have made. So
remember those first couple years of the PNC, Tiger was having Charlie tee off early and then just not teeing off.
Yeah.
The thumbs up. Like, 10-year-old or whatever.
All right, save my back.
So it was huge. Obviously, just a massive moment for Charlie. And it's exciting to see what might be in the future for the kid. Cause I mean, not to put the expectations on him, but he'll be massively popular. And I mean, more than anything, this is the first, I could be wrong, but I think this is the first victory anybody's gotten wearing Sunday red.
Sanctioned
event, right? Did Phillips win anything?
Yeah, no, there was a win, I believe. I thought Phillips won something.
He may have, but I'm going to call this the biggest victory in Sunday red history.
Yes, we don't believe he's like officially like they're not like promoting him. Sunday red. No,
he's just wearing dad's brand for now.
The first Woods to win in Sunday red, he could hold that over dad.
Right.
Dang. I wonder if he brought that up yet.
Okay.
I would.
We gotta shift gears here to the U.S. Open at Oakmont coming up in 2 weeks' time. The USGA is coming out publicly now and discussing how difficult the conditions are going to be, essentially saying like that's what Oakmont is. Oh yeah, Carl Phillips won in Puerto Rico wearing Sunday red, so he did win on the PGA.
My bad, Carl.
Koala Carl.
Hand up.
Put some hand respect up.
Accountability.
On that,
I'm sorry. I'm decked out head to toe right now.
Yeah, I know. Anyways. USGA is out there. They're saying how difficult Oakmont's going to play. We've already seen the reports, 6+ inches of rough, greens near 15 on the stimp. Rory McIlroy and Adam Scott paid a visit to the course today. Quotes are actually coming through via Eamon Lynch. Eamon reported, Scott hit every fairway on the front nine and shot 3 over. This was today. Tim's loving it because he's tuning in for the carnage. Also on site Monday was Rory McIlroy, who used a 3-wood en route to making bogey at the 298-yard par 3. Lynch said a veteran club member reminded McIlroy that Johnny Miller made 4 on that hole when he shot his historic 63 to win the 1973 U.S. Open, to which McIlroy replied, "That's great. Did he make a 7 on number 2 as well?" So Rory McIlroy made triple bogey on the second hole today as well. So, I mean, it's clearly playing difficult. And McIlroy told Lynch that the triple bogey came despite hitting, quote, 3 good shots. So that must mean there was some real carnage on the greens.
Yeah, we're going to see 2007 Oakmont, not 2016 Oakmont for sure.
Yeah,
There's not a chance anybody shoots 63, maybe for 16 holes.
Yeah.
Managing Director Rules and Open Championships. This is Jeff Hall of the USGA. He said the greens will be present next week, will be very, very fast. We will play most of our golf in the mid upper 14s on the stimp, but that's what is all about. So
this is it's what I've been talking about, guys. Like, we've this is the kind of chaos and carnage that I'm here for. And like, I mean, I told you guys a couple weeks ago that I watched the US Open film from 07, and having those guys in contention on coming down the stretch on Sunday at 7, 8, and 9 over, like, that's what I want. It's going to be great. Bad shots should be punished, penalized, whatever you want to say. Bad shots should be that way. You shouldn't get rewarded or get lucky breaks from hitting terrible shots. So this is what it's supposed to be. Oakmont is made to have lightning fast greens, and it's made to be long, and it's playing the way it's supposed to. I agree with you, Mike. I don't think we're going to get, I think it's going to be more 07 than 16. And that's huge, because 16 at the time, even though they tried to screw Justin Johnson out of that one, like, that was not, to me, what the US Open was supposed to be.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Okay, so Justin Thomas, he said prior to the Memorial, I went to Oakmont yesterday. I got in Monday. It's still tough. I would say all of the rumors and everything are pretty on point. so one of those tweets that was suggesting this was Luke Kerr-Dineen. He said, I heard rumors that the club spent a bulk of last year testing experimental strains of rough to see which one grew the thickest.
Wow.
So
that's awesome.
They spent, I mean, just the idea that somebody would be that diabolical is just, I love it. I love this so much.
Tim, the eighth hole, what do you think of the eighth hole, Tim, at Oakmont? It's going to play 290 plus. Would you make a par better?
Hell no. I mean, not in those conditions. Let's be serious.
A six iron in there.
I'm hitting, a couple of them. One to lay up and a punch to get over. But I'm not a huge fan of 290 plus par threes. I think you could make a par three just as hard at 200 or 210. I don't know. That's just going to be a hole. In my opinion, that's just going to be a hole that backs up play, because you're going to get a lot of double bogeys and a lot of triple bogeys on a par three hole. Mm. And that's going to slow down play. It just is, because you're taking a lot of shots on a hole that should be a shorter hole. I mean, that's just natural.
A massive, massive runway and a massive landing area too. Like I heard him say it on a video too that last week, that it's really going to test their short games more than anything else. It's not designed to be, par is designed to be a great score on that hole.
Right. But you're hitting a 3-wood into concrete, 14 on the stimp meter. I'm sorry. You're going to have to
get
lucky.
That's assuming you fly it on the green. Like, there's a huge landing area in front of the green too. Like, that's what their point is. And we talked about it on the show last week, Joey, John and I did, that like the idea that a par three is going to play half a shot over par is great to us. Like, that is, it's ideal. It's the US Open. You don't want, I know we hark on it a lot, but you don't want tournaments where it's 10, 12, 15 under par. I don't want Scottie Scheffler to shoot 12 under and the next guy to be 3 over, right? Like, I want the winning score to be around even par or over.
The eighth hole playing at 215 yards instead of 298 is not going to make the score 12 under par. It's going to still be plus 5 or plus 6. That's kind of my point with that.
Right. But if you're playing it at 215, your average score on that hole is going to be closer to 3 than 3.5.
Which is going to feel like a par 5 at Oakmont.
3.5 is what we want it at, baby. Let's go. Carnage.
We got breaking news. We have breaking news. we have to report on some breaking news, courtesy of the AP's Doug Ferguson. Max Homa has split with caddy Bill Hark. So Homa and Hark began working at Valero in April after Homa split with caddy Joe Greiner. This is courtesy of Paul Hadouin from the PGA Tour over on X. He reports there was some indication Homa and Hark was always going to be short term, so not entirely surprising. Let's see here. So Doug Ferguson reports Homa and Bill Hark are no longer together, according to a person informed of the split, who said only that Hark, quote, lost his job.
Homa carried his own bag today all day, so that makes sense. Yeah.
The person spoke to the AP on the condition of anonymity because word of separation needed to come from Homa. Homa didn't offer much insight. I'd much rather talk about the golf instead of all the questions about the caddy, Homa said. I'm good. Just hoofed it 36. And then as for the golf, this is live reaction from Homa about today's failure to qualify for the US Open. It's going to probably be heartbreaking, but it's all right. I haven't carried my bag 36 holes in a while, so I'm a little tired. So the story here is that Max Homa and caddy Bill Hark have split just pretty much weeks, if you want to do it like that, going back to Valero after he split with caddy Joe Greiner. So
yeah,
Max Homa has been unable to hold a bad guy.
Well, he's just trying to figure it out right now. I think it's natural, right? You see a lot of these guys when they struggle kind of go into eventually it's the caddy's fault. And Rory a few years ago even went through it when he got rid of his old caddy where he was struggling a little bit. You see it. Some of the guys are able to resist. You've heard talks of Spieth splitting with his guy for the last couple of years. He's been resisting it so far. I wouldn't be shocked if eventually that didn't happen because usually there's a caddy change involved when there's a lot of struggles going on. But yeah, who knows?
Okay, I got some trivia for you guys. So 2007 U.S. Open at Oakmont. Mm-hmm. What was the winning score?
Plus five.
Yeah.
You got it? And who was the winner, Mike?
Angel Cabrera.
There you go.
Gato. Tiger had a putt on 72.
I look back on for Tiger. He should have had that. You know, that one pretty bad. He ended up getting the PGA that year, but yeah, I look back at that and the Masters that year. You know, he was tied for the lead for a few holes in 07, that year that finished over par when Zach Johnson won.
Yeah.
Terrible weather in Georgia that year, but yeah, he had a few close calls that year. I think 07 was his best scoring average in his career, actually, or his tied for his best anyway.
Yeah, as mentioned, I watched that just a couple weeks ago, that U.S. Open film from that year. He had plenty of chances on the back nine, And then even on the last hole, he just needed a birdie to get into the playoff. Obviously, that's a big ask when the winning score is five over, but it just didn't work out for him. He never got the putt quite high enough.
What hole was it there? He missed that really short putt on the back nine.
I know the one you're talking about. I can't remember which hole it is. I'm not overly familiar.
Yeah, I look back at that. I'm like, Tiger makes that 99 out of 100 times. That's the one time he missed it. I'm like that.
Yeah.
You know, you look back at all those close calls and stuff. Like Tiger could have easily gotten to 19 already. Like injuries and you know.
Have an hour and 45 minutes to kill, that U.S. Open film is on YouTube, and it is great to see. It's good stuff. A lot of old names on there, too, that was kind of interesting to watch.
Yeah, like the Jeff Ogilvies of the world and guys of that
nature. Like you had Furyk in contention, all kind of stuff. Like it was good to watch.
It's memory. A few other notable results from Oakmont over the last 30 years. Ernie Els won in 1994. 5 under par in a playoff, won the U.S. Open. Cabrera at 5 over par in 2007. Paula Creamer won the U.S. Women's Open in 2010. Her winning score was 3 under. DJ in 2016, it was 4 under. It looks like it's going to be an over par winner, like from all the talk.
We can only hope.
But if it's not, I mean, it's not like they're going to be going deep under par. Like we'd be looking at something higher than 4 under par, I would say.
They're not going deep. Oh, if they're not here with us this week. Never mind.
If they want to, this is how they're going to have to do it. If they want to control the scores at some of these courses, because you can't keep backing them up. These guys are bombing the ball. Like Hutch said, if you hit a ball 20 yards offline, but you hit it 360, if you don't make the rough a penalty, they got a short shot to the green with nothing. So if you make the rough 7, 6 or 7 inches, that's awesome, because if you hit it that far offline, you won't be able to get a wedge farther than 60, 70 yards up the fairway. And that is, that'll help even it out some for the guys that don't, the guys
that are accurate. Better watch out. That'd be heavy balls coming at him like Spieth was hitting it.
they need to rotate the galleries too, so that they keep the grass high and not mat it down.
Yeah.
Here, going to that that shot Spieth hit, sorry to get off track for a second, but you go to these golf tournaments and stuff, usually majority of people I feel like would have enough knowledge to understand when they see somebody put a ball in the back of their stance, they've got their weight a little more on the left side. Like, it's going to come out low and hot. Mm-hmm. Why would you even get close to the line of where they're trying to go? I don't understand that. I don't care who it is. I don't care if it's Scottie Scheffler. I don't care if it's 2000 Tiger Woods. Anybody is liable to hit a shank at some point.
Clicks.
Because you're an idiot. Yeah.
I mean, are you looking for a payday or something like that? I mean, all you're going to get is a signed glove, and I'm sorry. And maybe if, it's Phil Mickelson or something like that, he might stuff a couple $100 bills in there. That's
because when we used to go to the Tour Championship in Atlanta, because I would go pretty much yearly back then, people would stand on hole number one. This is back before they flipped the nines. We would stand on the left side of the fairway whenever Phil was teeing off, about 300 yards out, because if we were going to get hit, we knew Phil would pay us a couple $100. Now, we're broke college kids at this point, right? A couple $100 is a big deal to us at that point.
Yeah.
We did one time have a guy who was about 8 yards away from us get hit, and he did get paid. So mind were in the right place. Now, as an adult who has money, who works and doesn't need a $200 handout, like, what an idiot. How stupid was I for doing that? But we did it.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen some of these old clips of Tiger too, and you could see people, they line up, in like the 300-yard, 320-yard range in an area where Tiger might miss it in hopes that he hits them.
Mm-hmm.
Like you'll see people, like, they'll try to run it down like a fly ball, like an outfielder trying to track down a fly ball in hopes of getting hit. It's just and not even to kick it out or something like that. It's to actually get hit in hopes.
That's what I'm gonna say. I'd be trying to kick it out in the fairway. That'd be my goal.
the 2000 PGA.
Bob
May, yeah. We're just out of nowhere. It's
You must have hit a tree.
Yeah. Oh shoot.
So John's audio is out. Fast forward to the 2035 US Open. Charlie Woods wins. I was trying to figure out what to talk about.
Nice save there, Hutch. Good job. Big rumor today. Well, not really a rumor. Brent Lee Romine of Golf Channel reported that Jose Luis Ballester, who is the sixth top-ranked amateur in the world, has passed up the opportunity to accept his Korn Ferry Tour card after finishing third in the PGA Tour University rankings. Reports are that the world sixth-ranked top amateur is on his way to LIV Golf. So we'll see what happens with that. I mean, interesting guys from Spain. I mean, he could be appearing as early as this week, apparently, at LIV Virginia. I believe it was Hugo Costa who's reporting on this, who's pretty tied into the Latin American golf scene. But I don't know. What are your guys' thoughts? Do you think that he'll maybe be joining the Fireballs or something like that?
He's going to be the poster child for how to tank a career before it starts.
Oh, we've had several of these top-ranked amateurs have done this repeatedly. And it's impossible for us to say, like, you can sit there and you can complain about these established golfers who went and took the bag and went. But these young guys who don't have anything, who don't have career earnings, you can never, ever, ever come down on them for taking a bag to go do this. Who knows if they're going to be a good professional golfer or not? Who knows?
Why can't we?
Because it'd be foolish to. Like, you can't hate on them for making a financial decision. You can't hate on them for Tim, if you had nothing coming out of high school and somebody offered you the chance to go work somewhere for pennies, you may not make anything, you may lose money, or we'll give you a guaranteed $50 million to come over here. It's a less prestigious company, but we'll get you to come over here. You're going to take the money, and I don't blame it. You can say what you want about the Brooks Koepkas, about the Phil Mickelsons of the world, about Bryson, Rom, whatever. They didn't need the money, right? Can you agree with that? They didn't need the money?
Of course not.
Okay.
Correct.
These kids are different. The kids are different because they're getting offered the first. And you don't know. Maybe this guy comes. You say he's from Spain, right, John?
Yes. And I also should add, this is the guy who took a piss in Ray's Creek. So Jose Luis Ballester is the 2024 reigning U.S. amateur champion.
And
he's a solid golfer. Yeah, he's a good golfer.
He could come from a village in Spain that lives in mud huts for all we know. This could be life-changing money for some of these kids. You know, there's the kid from Tennessee that went and did it. He had success over there on Legion 13. Like, go get your bag. Go get your money. Especially as a kid.
Go ahead, Tim. Go ahead.
All I was going to say was that's cool. Cool. You got a bag. That's cool. But you know what? There's a ton of guys on the tour that did the same thing with nothing, and they made a career, and that now they make tens of millions of dollars and they live comfortably ever after. And they're good golfers. They've made their way. These amateurs that are taking the money are taking the easy way out. That's fine. They're all about the bag. They're not about the golf game. How many of them are playing well that are on live? How many?
You don't know. You don't watch.
You do, but you don't talk about them because they're not playing good.
I think they're playing just fine. The kid from Tennessee, Caleb Surratt, has been playing great.
We did see another Spaniard. I think he's Spanish. Eugenio Chiquera.
Yeah,
he was also a top ranked amateur at the time that he went to live. He was actually first or second ranked amateur at the time that he went to live, and he's actually left live now. And he said that he's trying to, you know, get to the PGA Tour and pursue his dream of winning tournaments. He cited Tiger Woods and the history of the tour. So he's trying to get back.
And you know what, Tim? That's fine because he still got his bag. And then he tried to come back to the PGA Tour. I'm never going to hate on a kid for making money. Because you don't know his situation. It could be life-changing for his family. I'm never going to hate on a kid for doing that. You can say what you want about these established golfers, but doing it on a kid is ridiculous.
These bags are not as significant as some of the bags that were given out, obviously, right?
No.
$5 million, though, for example, could be a very significant bag.
It is all relative. It is all relative, right? Like, that's life-changing money for most people. It doesn't move the scale for Bryson DeChambeau, but that's life-changing money for most people.
Yeah. But, I mean, I'd say it probably more than not would probably come from a decent amount of money anyway. Like, they had enough growing up. Now, it's not always the case, but – you know, in most instances, you know, if you're in the golf world and, you know, chances are your family has some amounts of money that, you know, that afforded you to be able to play. Now, it's not always the case. So, I mean, yeah, sure. There is some kids where I understand it, you know, like I compare it to, you know, like, you know, you get this kid that a baseball player that comes from the Dominican Republic, he's 18 years old, you know, he comes from nothing and baseball is his way to get out, you know. But he, you know, finishes high school in America. You know, are you going to tell that kid to turn down the $5 million signing bonus or go to college and take a chance? You know, and, you know, you might develop better there. Yeah. So, I mean, like, that's like, and I've been on record of not being a big live guy by any means. But, Hutch, you do make a good point in terms of, you know, some of these kids, you know, they probably, you know, had to raise money to play the game, and you know they had to go to different programs in order to fund the tournaments, the equipment, the travel. I mean, there's a whole bunch that goes into it.
I would say that between all the sports, the chances of somebody coming from the slums and being successful at golf is probably the least amount. So when you talk about football, when you talk about football guys taking bags, and you talk about, you know, college basketball players taking bags or NBA players making the big money as rookies, when you're, I don't know many golfers that don't have money, because golf is expensive, all of it, from clubs to hotels to travel to, not everyone gets, you know, not everyone gets that sponsored, or they just go, oh, hey, cool, you're fine or whatever. So you got to have money to begin with to play golf for the most part and be good at it. You got to pay for lessons. Not many guys. Yes, there are a couple. You could probably find one or two or five guys that went through golf without making that, without getting lessons or private lessons, that made it to the tour. But almost all of them are getting lessons by the time they're 12 or 13 now. That costs money. It's thousands. Yeah. We're not talking about like $50. Mm-hmm. So you got to have money.
Thousands,
so
the guys compared to millions.
I got a hypothetical question for you guys. So Tiger Woods, he didn't come from a lot of money, right? Like, you know, his parents took out a second mortgage in order to fund his junior career. And if Liv were around in 1995, do you think he would have went?
Nope.
Like, he gets offered, you know, because everyone knew he was going to be this prodigy, right? Everybody knew about him to begin with. You know, the USAMs, you can go on and on. Do you think that he, you know, if he's offered $50 million back then, which is an ungodly amount of money, do you think he would have taken it?
No.
I think it's an interesting question. I think it's hard to say. It's easy to look back now and say no, but at the time, it definitely would have been a conversation for sure.
Yeah. But if you go back to that era and time, like Tiger also has, you know, when he came on the scene, the guys that he looks up to were on their way out at that point.
Yeah.
And he respected those guys at that time, right? So it can all go back to the legacy point and the history point. And I could see, and he had already signed like his first deal with Nike, like he signed like a
right out of the gate.
Was it $40 million or like?
I think that was LeBron.
That was LeBron, but okay, but like his second deal, was like $100 million or something, and first was maybe $20 million. Something like that. But like the money was there for Tiger Woods from an early point on when he burst onto the scene. It's a hypothetical. It's a good question. Who knows what he would have done,
but even
at that point.
To back then, like the golfers back then, to the best of my recollection, the ones who made a lot of money weren't, I don't think a majority of their money was coming on course. I think it was endorsements and stuff, because the prize pools, you've seen those stats for years of how exponentially the prize pools grew as Tiger's popularity grew. Like, he's responsible for all of this essentially. So it's an interesting conversation. It's very easy, like say, to look back now and say, no, the legacy and blah, blah, blah. But you know, he, like you say, Mike, he didn't really come from much. So I think it would have at least been a conversation.
Yeah.
I think it would have been like this. Can I play in the majors?
Whatever Earl decided.
No, his wall in his bedroom had nothing but Jack Nicklaus's majors. Every win, every score, every tournament. That's all he cared about. That's all he cared about was the majors. So if he were to have done that and taken the money, there would have been a guarantee that he got to play on the PGA Tour as well, whenever he felt like it. And that he could play in the majors all day, every day. So that would have been his two sticking points. And his first deal was 5 years, $40 million, 1996.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay.
So I tell you what I would like to have happen is Liv throw a bag at Charlie. That's my next move. Get Charlie on Liv, baby.
Not even graduated from high school.
He just got his license, and we're going to Dubai.
I don't think Tiger would go for that. I don't care how much money he threw at him.
I don't think he would have gone either, Mike. just taking a look at the Data Golf rankings, which many people are now considering to be the most accurate indication. You know, people aren't really looking at the official World Golf rankings anymore. DeChambeau, number three in the Data Golf rankings behind Scheffler and McIlroy. John Rahm is number four. Joaquin Niemann is number eight. He's actually 77th in the official World Golf rankings. The next best live golfer is 17th, Tyrrell Hatton, in the Data Golf rankings. He's 24th in the OWGR. After that, we're going way down the list to find live guys. So these are a more accurate indication. These are a more accurate indication of how things stand. Now, the U.S. Open, this is courtesy of Rob Ops on X. Some LIV guys actually got in via final qualifying today. Carlos Ortiz is in. Mark Leishman made his way in. And I can't pronounce this name. Jinichiro Kozuma advanced at the final qualifying site in Japan.
That was from the Asian tour?
Yeah, I believe so. Okay. And then the guys that were already – the guys in LIV who are already in the field – for the U.S. Open, who were exempt. Richard Bland, DeChambeau, Hatton, Johnson, Koepka, Mickelson, Niemann, Rahm, Reed, and Cam Smith. So there's a decent contingent of LIV guys who are in. McDowell is a long shot. He's just playing out of the West Palm qualifier, but it's on rain delay. And Sebastian Munoz has a chance as well at making first alternate. So he could find his way into the field if things go right.
Yeah, baby.
But there is 13 guys who have already secured their spot in the field from LIV. So
they got a bag in. They're playing in a major.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so I do want to touch briefly. I know it's been a pretty beefy show here, but Tour Championship format change has been announced. So they haven't actually announced like the full details of it, but I guess what they've decided to do is eliminate the starting strokes format. So everybody's going to start once again at even par when the tournament begins.
Yeah, that's great. So,
which is good overall, I think. And then they're also saying it's going to be more difficult to actually make the Tour Championship just by way of the points allocations and stuff. And then the money is also going to be better represented throughout the finish that you get in the field. So
it's just so hard. Like we've talked about it before. It's just so hard to make one tournament the representation of your entire season.
Yeah.
Right. Like there's no good way to do it. The starting strokes way was a little too flawed. Eliminated some guys from the start. Starting them all at even is a little weird too, to try to, there's not a good way to do it other than just to keep them separate. I know how much they hate the idea of some guy holding the Tour Championship trophy and then some other guy holding the FedEx Cup. But you can't make one tournament representative of your entire season. Cause what if Scotty doesn't win it? Scotty's the player of the year, right? But what if he doesn't win it?
Yeah. Like I think there's a world if he wins the next two majors, he could still not win the FedEx Cup.
There's definitely a world. Yeah. I mean, he doesn't win the Tour Championship. Yeah,
I think majors should hold a little more value in terms of final rankings, in terms of FedEx Cup. Those should, you know, dictate, you know, where guys are at the end of the season more for sure.
There's just not a great answer for it. It's one of those conundrums that golf has, but it on the list of conundrums that golf has, it's kind of down towards the bottom.
We do have another ranking. I don't know if you guys have seen this. It's going semi-viral on X. It's not the official World Golf ranking. It's not Data Golf. It's President Trump. So his rankings are out.
White House golf rankings.
Now Bryson DeChambeau is high on that list. He's number one. So
because he's the best.
So Trump has Bryson and Scheffler I believe, as his top two, and then just completely forgot about Rory McIlroy. And Bryson was at Bryson was lobbing wedge shots on the south lawn of the White House this afternoon.
Oh, well, awesome. I guess that makes sense as to why he got the president's endorsement.
So
they did that breaking 15 together. So, you know, they definitely have some camaraderie.
Trump's a player too.
He gets it from point A to point B. That's for sure.
That's what most old guys do.
These are the official changes to the Tour Championship and the playoffs. So this is courtesy of golf.com. No starting strokes. The 72-hole winner will be crowned FedEx Cup champion. So that sounds like a lot like the old days. I think if you won the tournament, you also kind of won the FedEx Cup.
Yeah. Give us more 2007, Hutch.
They're also making a more challenging course setup to include more risk-reward moments. Prize money is going to be distributed throughout the FedEx Cup playoffs instead of a $25 million prize at Eastlake. Defending champion Scottie Scheffler said he supported the changes. Josh Carpenter of Sports Business Journal also reported that in a couple years, when the Tour Championship is sponsored by Coca-Cola, right? And Southern yes. Company. Yep. When those sponsorships end, we could see the Tour Championship move to an alternate venue, potentially even outside of Atlanta, likely, like outside of the state of Georgia.
Have any of you guys ever been to the Tour Championship at Eastlake?
No.
Eastlake is in like, trying to think of the best way to say this.
It's not. You're kind of
in a place that you wouldn't expect a very nice golf course.
Like, as soon as you're off the property, you're in a completely different world, basically.
Yeah, and getting there is not ideal. Parking is not ideal. Like every time we would go, we'd have to park at what was Turner Field. It's torn down now. That's a parking lot, and then you just get shuttled over there, and you're dropped off in like. It's not a great area, but then you walk through the gates and it's like, oh, we're here. Like it's, I could see it moving from Eastlake to, definitely. I mean, no shame on Eastlake. Like it's a great place, but it's kind of repetitive, I guess, at this point.
Yeah.
Okay. RBC Canadian Open. That's pretty much it for everything we got this week, fellas. RBC Rory. Canadian Open this week. I'm not sure if you guys are dialed into who's teeing it up. Any picks for the week?
I will be rewatching Tiger's best shot, arguably ever on tour, on YouTube.
Give me Rory. He's gonna take the narrative back from Scotty. He says, "I see you've been talked about enough, and y'all are talking about my driver too much. He's not gonna miss a single fairway all week."
Rory has won. This is at a new court. This is at TPC Toronto in Caledon, Ontario.
How far is that from where you at?
Oh, I'm like 5 hours.
You making a trip?
I'm not sure. Probably not, to be honest. I just have a lot of other stuff going on right now.
But I don't blame you. I wouldn't either. Man. I don't even go to the Tour Championship and it's 40 minutes down the road.
Well, that is unacceptable, Hutch.
Right.
Give me Corey Connors. I'm going to take a Canadian this week.
He likes a Canadian.
Yeah. I like the.
Hey, I do. Before we wrap up and be done, I do want to. Co-owner Brent sent us a video. Did you see the video yet?
I have seen the video. I'm not sure if Joey can get it up, though.
Whether he can get it up or not. Shout out to Bob Doe Sports and Grant, right? He shouted us out.
Yep. They said.
Yeah, it's not going to be up in time, but.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to be.
Shout out to them.
Yeah. Shout out to Grant Horvat and. Was it
Robbie?
Was it Fat Perez or was it Robbie or both?
It was Robbie.
Okay. Robbie Berger. Yeah. He's a beauty.
Shout out to them. Thank you, Grant. Shout out. Whoever his orthodontist was, he's got some good teeth.
He does have the greatest smile on the internet. Yeah, I know, right?
He's the epitome of a shit-eating grin, for sure.
If it was white, because that thing is shiny. It'll blind you every time he smiles.
I know, yeah. Just good for him, man. He's got a beautiful swing. He's got a beautiful smile, yeah. All is good in his world.
I was going to say something, but I'm not going to. But yeah, let's go with I think Rory's going to win this week. And more importantly, guys, like this time next week, we'll be getting ready for carnage and chaos, man, at Oaklawn. And I can't wait.
Oh, it's going to be awesome.
Fellas, stay tuned next week. We'll obviously be going hardcore with our shows. We do additional shows during US Open week, so you can expect shows from us. We'll be live on Sunday. We'll also have a show probably Friday night, but it could be Wednesday. And then we'll have a show next Monday, as we always do, to tee up the week. So three shows next week. And then the week after a major, we don't usually go live on the Monday, just because we were live on the Sunday. But you can look forward to three shows next week from us. As always, we go live on X, we go live on YouTube, and after the fact, you can listen to us over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Amazon Music. Fellas, yeah. This has been a good show, a long one. Got into a lot on this show. Thanks to everyone for tuning in and watching.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Until the next show, we're going to sign off. My name is John. I've been joined by Hutch Bennett, Tim Bowman, and Mike Carbone. Later.